WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Jazz musician and composer Marty Ehrlich travels in several musical orbits. His versatility on soprano and alto saxophones, clarinet, bass clarinet, and flute has made him a valuable sideman in many adventurous ensembles. He's been a regular in groups led by John Carter, Mujal Richard Abrams, and Anthony Davis. Ehrlich also leads his own group, which showcases his own compositions. He has a new record called Traveler's Tale. This is the title track, featuring Ehrlich on alto, Stan Strickland on tenor, Lindsay Horner on bass, and Bobby Previtt on drums. Talk to us about the instrumentation on it, the two saxophones on Traveler's Tale.
Okay. Well, I've been playing with Stan Strickland for many years, starting back in Boston, Massachusetts, in the early 70s, where I was a student and Stan was one of the active performers, a creative force, I would call him, in Boston. I like using the blend of two woodwinds. It gives me, since we both play some different instruments, it gives some different voices, both as far as tone color and also like a high voice and a low voice.
Now, you're both a composer and an improviser. Mm-hmm. Do you value any one more than the other?
Well, I think that they are basically the same thing. They're both the creation of music. Improvising is done in the moment, though with often quite a bit of preparation. And composition is, you could say, is improvisation put into notation.
You play with the New York Composers Orchestra, mm-hmm. among other things. And one of your pieces, well, a couple of your pieces are recorded by the New York Composers Orchestra. I want to play the orchestra's rendition of your piece, Pliant Plaint. Mm-hmm. This is actually a reworking of a piece that you initially did in a small group.
Right. Pliant Plaint, in this version for the big band, is actually a shortened version of a longer piece I'd written for a large ensemble. But the actual melody itself uses what I'd sort of call a history of 20th century rhythm, or, you know, mostly from the jazz language. There's sort of straight ahead feel, a double time feel, a stop time, a two beat feel. There's some non-metrical playing in it, in a very condensed form. I hope is the kind of piece that sort of makes the persons sit up in their chair and say, wait a second, that this is not how things are usually put together.
You play alto, soprano, clarinet, bass clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
Which do you think of as being your first instrument?
Well, my first instrument was clarinet, and then saxophone, and then I added flute. But I've played different instruments in a lot of different ensembles. And in my own music, I try to think, well, which instrument will help this composition? Sometimes I do it the other way around. Like, I really want to write something that'll exploit something I like doing on the flute or on the bass clarinet, you know. So they sort of feed off each other that way.
Do you think of yourself as being cast into a different role in different bands? And for instance, when you're playing with Mujal Richard Abrams, mm-hmm. is it different from playing with John Carter or George Russell? Do you take sure. on a different personality or are different colors expected of you?
Well, for sure. I mean, first of all, these are all very unique musical worlds that these artists have created. And I feel the role of the sideman, a particularly dated term, I must say, but understood at least, is to put yourself into the ethos of their music, which is not to say that you can't do something that really contrasts some of what they've set up in their writing. But it's a challenge to play from the inside of their music, you know.
When you say that the word sideman is dated, do you mean because it's not side person, or did you have other reasons
for saying that? No, it's just somehow the whole thing
that?
Of like, it just seems like a sort of more of an economic term than a musical term. I think I'm more of a, you know, you're like a participant in the making of a music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't like you're doing a, you know, playing a dance or something, you know. It's a little, this should be a word that seems has a little more seriousness to it than sideman.
Now, you grew up in St. Louis.
Right.
You became a member of a group in St. Louis called BAG, the Black Artist Group.
No, I was never...
You were never a member of that?
Member of BAG. I was a member of a group called the Human Arts Ensemble.
Ah, okay.
BAG was, as its title said, an all-black group.
Yeah, so I was wondering how you managed to get in.
I have played with the majority of the artists from there who have since gone on to international fame and renown.
Such as Julia Temple and Oliver Lake, Hammett Blewett.
Right,
yeah.
Lester Bowie.
Did you ever feel in your St. Louis days that race was an obstacle at all, an obstacle to playing with the people who you wanted to play with? Because of things like BAG, the Black Artist Group, you know, where coalitions were in part racially defined.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's a big subject. At that time, there was a lot of political nationalism, and it was pretty out front in St. Louis. St. Louis had an interesting sort of counterculture blend at that time, in that there was a fair amount of, within the artist community, mingling of different, you know, blacks and whites and people from different, you know, sort of artistic backgrounds. There was a lot of mingling of poets with musicians and playwrights and actors. But, I mean, I think that, you know, there's no, I can't say yes to that. On the other hand, I can't say no. I mean, race is still, you know, obviously a big issue within our society and is defined and, you know, in a lot of different ways by different people.
Well, you've really played, though, in all types of settings racially. I mean, you've played with black groups, with white groups, with mixed groups.
Yeah, I think I probably have had more moved through different circles more than most people do. And I feel, you know, I mean, it's definitely what I've wanted to do as far as, you know, I don't want to not... You know, philosophically, it's what I've wanted, as far as well as musically.
Jazz has become very pluralistic, but on the other hand, it's become very fragmented, and you often get the feeling that people in one part of the jazz scene have no idea what musicians are doing in another part. And I wonder if you ever find that frustrating and if you ever feel that there's even a large community within jazz who's unaware, perhaps, of the music you're making.
Oh, I think for sure. I think a lot of people, you know, one of the funny things is, you know, musicians tend to not listen as much at a certain point as, let's say, when they're up developing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of time, money, and energy to keep up with all that's going on. You know, people say to me, there's no one out there like Coltrane. There's no one who's, like, so obviously, like, a leader, you know. And I say, I'm not so sure that there ever will be again. I think that was... Or maybe at least let me say that in a way I think that's very good. Because it's more the challenge is that each artist find what he or she can do with the most combination of sincerity and invention. And I think that's the lesson of someone like Coltrane, is how he kept making choices, getting rid of what didn't work for him, zeroing in on what did. But I think it's good that there's no one type of thing that you have to do. And not to say that people aren't constantly trying. I mean, you know, at one point there can be a ideology that you have to be playing in a more sort of a newer language, and then now there's a thing that, you know, if you can't play, show that you can play basically in the language of the, you know, 50s and early 60s, then you aren't really a jazz player, you know. You know, these swings from sort of the avant-garde to the tradition. And I think especially in relation to this large category of jazz, it's been best when there's been less self-consciousness about meeting a sort of a rigorous classical standard of what it should be.
Well, we're out of time. Marty Ehrlich, thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure.
Marty Ehrlich's new album, The Traveler's Tale, is on Inja Records. This is Fresh Air.